This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, try to lure language down into the drains. It is name season here at The Allusionist. Over the next few episodes, we're going to be exploring names because people have a lot of feelings and opinions about their names, and it's been really fascinating to hear yours since the episode a few weeks ago about noun names. I've been thinking about mine too. Helen, it's alright. I don't have a great attachment to it, but I don't mind it. Wish it had more proper consonants. Zaltzman, well, the Z's are a treat. But people see them and they panic about how to pronounce the name, and even when I'm spelling it out for them, they will write down S instead of Z. Still, I do love being at the end of the alphabet. Also, there is a mission for you to contribute to a future episode if you like. Stick around, I'll tell you more about it at the end. On with the show.
The way people pronounce my name incorrectly has become different over the years. I used to get a lot of Dwayna misreadings, like Diana and Deanna and Deanna, that kind of thing. But now I get a lot more of Duana. I say Duana, which is sort of a wide, flat A that I think only my European parents really actually can pronounce. But I often introduce myself, "Hi, I'm Duana, nice to meet you." And people say, "Oh, hi, Duana, how are you?"
Now I'm feeling the pressure to say her name right. This is Duana Taha.
My name is Duana Taha. I am by day a television screenwriter, but also write a column on names and sort of the dilemmas therein on laneygossip.com, and wrote a book called The Name Therapist a couple of years ago about the dilemmas that people have with their names well into their adult lives. And as I wrote the column, it was very clear to me, something that I guess I had known but not really articulated, that people's issues with the names they choose for their children, but even their own names, are almost never resolved. People don't talk about them. It's the word that you use the most often and the soonest to describe yourself, and yet nobody's really ever talked about, well, it kind of makes me feel like this.
Duana's been thinking about names pretty much ever since she became aware of having one. Her first name, Duana, was chosen to reflect her mother's Irish heritage. Her last name, Taha, is from her Egyptian father. Altogether, hers is an uncommon name, and growing up in Canada in the 80s and 90s, that really informed her identity.
Definitely, that's the childhood wound part of it. At a time when there were five Jennifers in my first grade class, there were no stickers with my names on them or hairbrushes or mugs or whatever else. And it made me feel a little bit, this is a minute version of this problem, but it made me feel a little bit invisible. And so I started trying to do more research into, well, where is my name? What is it? What does it come from? Why do I have a name that doesn't land anywhere else? And the short answer is my immigrant parents wanted to split the difference and give me a Gaelic name. And I guess my dad took it for granted when my mom chose, oh, yes, this Gaelic name, Duana, that it was a name that people knew and worked with and understood. Turned out not to be so true.
Are there lots of Duanas in Ireland?
There aren't. This was my mom as a kid telling me there are lots of Duanas in Ireland. You'll meet them all the time. And of course, when we went back there, people would say to me, "Your name is what?" Yeah, there aren't. It's a very old name, but it is a real name. It's not a, it's not an honorific for Dwayne.
With those feelings of invisibility, the absence of mugs and things with her name on, and the inconvenience of everyone getting it wrong, it took Duana a while to become happy about having an unusual name. For a brief period, she even tried to go by a name she saw as exciting and all North American, Megan.
How did your parents react when they noted you using a different name to the one they had given you?
Oh, they laughed at me. I mean, they were not particularly sympathetic. They thought that I was lucky to not be named in the same vein as everyone else. And certainly in those days, like in the early 80s, there was a much narrower swath of what was an acceptable name. So you really were either in the pack or out of it. And they thought, like, why would you want to be like everybody else? As it happens, their birth names are, when boiled down, the most common names given. His first name, which he doesn't use, is Muhammad. And her first name, which she doesn't use, is Mary. And they were both called kind of either middle names or variations therein. But I definitely think that is part of why they thought it was such a gift to have an unusual name.
When Duana's younger sister was born, Duana made her feelings known when her parents were choosing the baby's name.
I definitely reacted poorly when I thought that they were looking for another Irish name in a similar vein. Our surname is Egyptian, so they wanted that same idea of an Irish name. And they told me they were debating Shannon. And at the time, that was very much in vogue. And I was livid at the idea that she wouldn't sort of go through the same paths as I would. I was also 5 years old.
All the mugs she would have with her name on, so unfair.
Just absolutely unfair. It's just scandalous. So they wound up going with Sheena. So her name, Sheena, is more popular than mine by a long shot while still being somewhat uncommon, if not unusual. Probably the sweet spot for a lot of parents, wanting a name that is easy and more easily understood. It wound up in pop culture a little bit, so that made probably an easier road for it. She happens to be an easier person than I ever was as a child. So do people accept the name a little bit more, or was it less of a pain point for her, so it was a non-issue? These are the questions you can chase around a circle for a long time.
At the far end of the name usualness scale from Duana is her husband, Michael. Michael was the most popular boy's name in North America from 1961 to 2004. That is a lot of Michaels.
He had an extremely popular name and quite liked that. Didn't mind that commonality. And so right now, certainly all the questions I get, every single person specifies, I don't want them to be one of several in a class. I don't want them to be, you know, that kind of thing. That said, they're looking for unique names that are still utterly in the respectable and acceptable Venn diagram, you know, the continuum there. So, and then they get frustrated when there aren't that many names that fall into the window that they would find acceptable.
So just very broadly, I mean, it's difficult because naming trends change so much and there's a geographical variation as well. But just practically, if people are looking for a name for a person, where should they be looking on name trends? Should they be looking for something that is like between 100 and 500 in popularity so people can spell it, but there aren't 10 of them in the same class or what?
Well, so this is the difficulty with the name trend. So below the top 100 is definitely going to do better for you if you want something that is not in fairly popular use. What happens, though, I would say below, call it 250, is that it's not that the names are more rare, it's that they're spelled more rarely. They are tabulated based on how many people are given a given name. So Kelsey with an EY might be at 199 and Kelsey with an IE is at 438, but it doesn't make it rarer. And the other thing is to listen to sounds. You know, there are so many people who choose, oh, well, I love Ella, but it's a bit popular. So I'm going to go with Elle or Elliot or Eleanor or et cetera. And they are essentially all going to sound very similar in a group. So I think definitely try and look at those trends and go against the grain if you can, which is to say right now you spoke about not having a lot of consonants. I feel like there are a lot of names that sort of speak to that. Ellen and Ivy and Ella and so forth are popular young girls' names. If you do pivot to something like Margaret or Callista, you know, you're going to be going against the grain, but our ears start to like the sounds of things that we already hear, which is why those can sound a bit off brand at first, but say the name out loud a lot rather than read it and find something that you feel like you want to be comfortable saying ad nauseum for the next, hopefully 40 odd years.
Yeah, something you can scream across the playground.
Absolutely. And that works as well, sort of whispered. But the biggest thing that I say the most often to people is to remember that you are naming a person and not a baby. They're a baby for a very, very, very short time, and the name is going to go with them through their whole life. So that's why I tend to veer away from cute. Cute is great. Have a cute, but have something that is also not cute.
I asked you listeners on the Illusionist Facebook whether you had any problems with your names. And wow, did you ever. Thankfully, Duana is here to deliver some name therapy. Elizabeth says she found out at 16 that she'd been named after one of her father's ex-girlfriends, and she changed her name.
Oh, interesting. Wow. I hear that more often than you might expect, that there are people who were named for past paramours or, well, I just really like the name. And often you'll find, I talk about people who have stealth first names, people who, you know, you walk around your whole life calling them Helen, for example, and then you find out that, in fact, their first name is actually Marietta or something.
A number of people, they're all male, who talk about being named after male relatives. Mm-hmm. One of them is William Jr., and he says Jr. means you're always the lesser one. Couldn't they have put a little more effort in? Bart says, I have a number at the end of my name. I'm the third. And while I love my late grandfather and deeply disliked my late uncle, I never really liked the fact I was not given a name of my own. I'd love to find a way over it.
Yeah, I really feel for them, because this is a practice that I've never really loved. The idea that if you name someone an honorific name, and there are pockets of people who are really, really into that and some who aren't, but I'm always kind of fascinated by the people who don't see, well, you might be imbuing either the pressure to be like that person, usually they are admired in some way, you know, or the implication that you are like that person if they're less desirable than maybe you think, you know, especially if you find something out kind of late in the game, as Elizabeth did about her birth name, that can be really uncomfortable to live with. And as you were reading the portion from William, I was thinking about junior means you're always the lesser. And I thought, well, what about when you are not the junior anymore? Like, do you change your whole name and your image to being a senior? Especially given there are some people who use the name junior or the sort of the name nicknames. This is one of those absurdities of language that I learned kind of late in the game. The idea that a junior is, or the second is always the second, but the names or nicknames, Trip and Trey and names like that, are meant to stand in for being the third. And or Chip is meant to be like chip off the old block, and Skip, if you were named after a grandfather, but there was no intervening generation, it skipped a generation. But beyond that, I would say if you don't owe your name anything, and you don't owe the sort of honor of carrying around somebody else's name anything. So this is really, it's a more easily said than done thing to do. But if try out going by your middle name sometimes in low pressure situations, float it at the coffee shop, see what happens, see if it gives you a sense of self that is less encumbered by everyone that you've sort of been named in line with, and definitely feel like it's your own name. This is the thing, your own name is yours. And so it is yours to modify or play around with as you like. And definitely you should feel entitled to do so, even if it's going to cause some pearl clutching.
You're still an entire person.
Absolutely. You're still an entire person. Yes. But this is sort of, I get quite evangelical, but this is sort of the unexpected pressure of a name that belongs to somebody else, is that it does follow a child who becomes an adult around and maybe impedes them feeling like they're not a whole person.
My family background is Jewish by ethnicity, and you don't name people after living relatives. Mm-hmm. It's very insulting to do that, which I think is quite practical as well. But my grandfather was deliberately named after a living relative as a kind of trolling.
Like a snub? Like a... Wow.
And I just think, what a weird thing to have attached to you from birth, that was your usage.
That's epic, to be used almost as revenge, and to know that is amazing.
I think it's interesting seeing how critical some people are of their parents' decisions, and not necessarily unfairly. Laura, on the one hand, says, my middle name is the city where I was conceived. I think I'm over it. And then Kenton, which is his middle name, said, but he goes by it, says, my mum told me that she found my first name, Ronald, in a book of names. I always felt like that was phoning it in.
Oh, interesting. I mean, I'm interested in the whole scenario there because I think most people don't have a lot of names at their disposal. I think that name books and now the websites, Baby Name Wizard and Nameberry are huge, huge name resources. I think a lot of people, when they think about it, call to mind a handful of friends and colleagues whose names they wouldn't choose for various reasons. And another handful of names from books or television, which have been either used or vetoed by a partner or so forth. So they don't have a lot more. I'm not sure I think it's phoning it in to read a book. Although it sounds like what Kenton is saying about Ronald is that there's no specialness to it, that there's no story. Like he wanted there to be a reason and a method behind choosing Ronald over the other 10,000 names in the book. As for the city of conception thing, that's the exact opposite, right? Like that is absolutely a name with a story. The fact that it's not the story Laura prefers, but nobody can say that they didn't think about it, that it wasn't thoughtful. And they also put Laura in front so that she had plausible deniability.
It doesn't have the sexual connotations for her, presumably. Betsy says, I was named after the title character in Understood Betsy, a children's book that was popular in my mother's 1920s childhood. Little did she know that I would be cursed in my 1950s childhood by the popularity of the Betsy Wetsy doll. The doll came with a tiny bottle and diaper, put water in the bottle and inserted the tip into the doll's mouth, and yes, the water emerged from the other end into the diaper. You can imagine the playground torments.
Oh, Betsy, I feel you, because one of the things that people say often to me is they say, well, I don't want my child to be made fun of on the playground for their name. And I kind of experienced that in the sense that I had an unusual name that didn't seem to fit in. But my philosophy on the playground taunting is that we are lucky enough to live in a more diverse society where we hear about more names all the time that are less and less likely to be taunted just because they're unusual. Playground taunting is kind of a thing of the past where names are concerned. The exception is with situations like Betsy Wetsy and Betsy, or, you know, whatever the next scandal may be associated with a particular name. I remember really feeling for girls and women named Monica in the sort of late 90s and 2000s era. And those are things you kind of can't guard against, that, you know, the popularity of the Betsy Wetsy doll is not something that somebody can anticipate. I got an email from a woman the other day who's upset because her daughter's name that she carefully chose is now a dating app. And that there might be perceptions about that.
She called her daughter Grindr.
So, yeah, that one is hard to avoid. That's a case where if Betsy had a full name, if she was actually Bettina or Elizabeth or so forth, I would maybe see if she could steer things that way for a bit.
She could go by Bet if she didn't want to be Betsy. She could just lop off the end.
Absolutely. Bet or be that kind of thing. But yeah, I feel that one because that's totally unanticipatable.
This one from Paul Forte. He says, I like my given name, but I have an unusual aversion to being addressed by it. I think it's because when my closest friends and family speak directly to me, using the pronoun you, or you use nicknames, so when someone actually calls me Paul, it usually precedes something serious or indicates I'm in trouble, similar to how some people feel when a parent calls them by their full name. I've read that hearing one's name spoken aloud can release endorphins or trigger other feel-good reactions in our brains, but it seems to do the exact opposite for me. Interesting.
It sounds as though Paul Forte doesn't necessarily identify with his name that much, or doesn't associate with being Paul as opposed to being you or honey or bud or whatever is being used in his family, that that he doesn't have a lot of associations with that, which is really interesting. And I think that's very familiar for a lot of people who, for one reason or another, just don't have a big link to their first names. That can be the Jennifers who are Jens, or, you know, the people who you meet who are very clear about, I am Allie and not Allison. And yes, it's derived from Allison, but please don't call me Allison. That's not my name. Who have some sort of negative association with that. But I guess the question is, if you want to fix that, how do you do that? And I guess it seems like some sort of very specific, maybe ASMR therapy, just hearing, you know, very exciting or comforting renditions of Paul. Paul, I'm sure somewhere somebody has a service where they could record your name being spoken in dulcet tones for you if you wanted that.
Actually, that's kind of brilliant. Maybe I could do that as a side
right?
note. Just reading people's names till they're happy.
Yeah, there's a business opportunity to be had there.
This I found interesting from Polly. She says, I was originally supposed to be named Christine, but instead was named at the last minute Polly. I was an unhappy child and youth and have harboured the feeling that if I had been named Christine, my life would have been different and I would have been different. But I also have had the idea that I wouldn't have been as creative. I'd have been popular, not spending my time in my workroom, etc. Are our names our destiny?
Sort of implicit in your question is the idea that Christine might have been much more social, much more, you know, able to fit in her childhood and youth. And I'm sure there are a million stories of Christines who both did and didn't.
Yeah. I don't know whether I would associate Christine with being an extrovert, says Polly, seeing her flip side self.
You know, for me, that sort of golden child name when I was growing up, that idea that if I was just named this, everything would be kind of a sunny California surf movie was Megan. That to me meant just the ultimate in fitting in and sliding by. But I think that it's not that Polly is intrinsically, obviously, a name that doesn't fit. It's that knowing about your name, knowing about the bait and switch, essentially, made you kind of self-contemplative, self-reflective, which combined with the personality that you already had makes you maybe, yeah, a bit more interior and a bit more reflective of who you are, which leads to the creativity.
This is one from George, who says, my birth name is Andrew. So many people named their children Andrew in 1972. There were six in my junior school class alone. I changed my name legally. My parents had originally called me Andrew, as they were married on St. Andrew's Day. Was there any way I could have made the kick in the teeth of telling them I hated it and was permanently changing it any easier?
Oof. I just want to point out how this is why I love this topic, because the questions are never just about names. They're about family and feelings and the pressures that we carry around. I think the sell of that is the most truthful part, that, you know, I don't love being one of several. It's not that the name itself is so undesirable. It's that I am one of many and I really would prefer not to be. This is the thing that's hard, is that 99% of the time, parents or guardians or people who name us put a lot of time and effort into it. And so they do feel a sense of ownership over the name, even though it actually has nothing to do with them. So definitely being sensitive to the idea that the name you chose was chosen with love, but it doesn't work for me in the way that I need it to, is the way to approach that, for sure. And I also wouldn't get wrapped into conversations about how your new name is better. Don't justify the name, just explain the reasons why you need a little space from your birth name at this time. Adults who don't feel comfortable with their names for any reason should feel entitled to investigate it and dissect why and do what they want to, whether that's change it or, you know, take it to therapy or journal about it, to change the narrative, I guess, because I think it's a big cross to bear if you don't like the name that you are introduced by.
I have a mission for you, listeners. If you have changed your name and you would be willing to talk about it in a future episode of the show, what you would need to do is record yourself answering the following two questions. One, why did you change your name? Two, why did you choose the name you chose? record yourself, phone voice memo is fine, there is no need to hire a full studio. As this is for public consumption, you only need to use as much of your current or former names as you're comfortable with me airing. Then email your recordings to allusionistshow@gmail.com. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is gynarchy, noun, rule by women or a woman. Try using it in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, with music by Martin Austwick. Thanks to Shelley Scarrow. Duana Taha is a writer. See her work on the upcoming season of Slasher Solstice on Netflix, as well as the web series Upstairs Amy and Emerald Code. Read her book, The Name Therapist, How Growing Up With My Odd Name Taught Me Everything You Need to Know About Yours. She also writes a regular column about names at laneygossip.com, and she and Lainey Louie host a podcast, Show Your Work. Find Allusionist Show on Facebook and Twitter, and on the show's website, you will find lots of things to read related to each episode, the full dictionary entry for the word of the day, transcripts, and some new merch. Got a couple of new t-shirt designs for sale, one with a very pretty typewriter design, and the other is a Winterval-themed riff on the festive sweater with a ton of detail on it. Political correctness gone mad. See those and all things illusional at the show's forever home, theillusionist.org.